Let's talk about darkness. So this week is, God says to Moshe, Boy El Paro. Come to Paro. Doesn't say go to Paro. The Zohar Kodesh mentions this this drama that God invites Moshe to come into the rooms, Idrin Bosa Idrin, and then he meets this Tanin HaGodol, the great serpent that Pharaoh represents, the earthly backside, the nemesis, the opposite, the unholiness, that if ever a human being represented the opposite of God in the world, then it was Paro. And maybe it's because nowhere in the world, in the history of the world, has there been this human God figure like the pharaohs were, that they really talked themselves into believing they were divine, and their worshippers really talked themselves into believing they're divine. And so, you know, Pharaoh really represents an opposite to God. God says, "I know I'm God up here, and down there, look at this creature that calls itself the All-Powerful, Almighty." So, the Tanin HaGodol, this great serpent that Moshe is invited to approach, and he's afraid. You know, it's part of this very, very ancient primitive drama that Avraham Avinu, our father Abram, took us beyond those fears to this pristine idea of God. It was so far away, detached from the possibility of, you know, God being someone else. You know, we were talking how, you know, God isn't even something else. That Pharaoh really represents something retrograde, something really backward in the human psyche. This idea that we want to endow people with divine power because we ourselves don't feel like we have it. Who knows what is in the mind of an Egyptian? It's very hard to know. But we're told that Mitzrayim, Egypt, is the most tummy place. That God doesn't want to be there. And that Moshe, you know, when he talks to Pharaoh and Pharaoh says to him, please pray, Moshe says, well, I, when I get out of the city, I'll pray. Because this is a mokoim gilulim v'avodah zarah. This is such a disgusting place. I don't want to even talk to God because, you know, talking to God kind of invokes the divine presence, and he doesn't want to be here. So, you know, we can say that v'loshen b'nei adam, in human speech terms, you can say, well, God doesn't want to be here, but of course God is here. And yet, in this week's Sedra, where we find the Makkos Bechoros, the killing of the firstborn, it talks about Kechatzos Lailo Ani Yoytze. God says, "Around midnight, I'm going to go out into Egypt." And the Rebbe Rabbinim says, you know, what do I, why it should say, I'm coming into Egypt. You know, what's that? I'm going to go out. So he says, like, God's appearance in Egypt was like midnight, kachatzos, you know, there is no midnight. You know, you can't point to any moment in time and say, this is the time. It was the time when I looked at the clock, but by the time I finished telling you what the time is, it's not the time anymore, right? So kachatzos, if you could imagine that imaginary moment when, you know, 12 o'clock happened, it wasn't, you know, it's like it was an instantaneous moment. That's how much time God wants to spend in Egypt. You know, and God's appearance in Egypt is already a going out. It's like, all we know is that God left. That's how fast his stay was in Mitzrayim. So this interesting Torah from the Noiz Deshin, he talks about darkness. God says to Moshe, Netei otcha l'shamayim v'hi choshech. Stretch out your hand on the heaven and there will be darkness. So the Medrash brings a posuk, Sholach choshech v'yachshich. He sends darkness and it becomes dark. Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu l'malochim. God says to the angels, Hamitzrim ru'im lilkos b'choshech. The Egyptians deserve to be smitten with darkness. Miyad iskimu kulam ke'achas v'lo imoru es tevoris. So immediately all the angels agree and none of them argues. Moshe l'melech, so the Medrash continues with a moshel, an example. A king, shitzivu l'hakos lo evet chamishim megalbin. There was a king who wanted to punish this slave with 50 wax. Vehikoiso, so he gave it, he commanded somebody to do it. Vehikoiso meyo megalbin, and he hit him with 100. Hoisiv lo mishaloi, and he added of his own. Afkan, here also in Egypt, sholach choshech, God sent darkness, vayachshich, and the angels added darkness of their own. So, the Noiz Deshin brings another Medrash. The Medrash says, Mehechen hoye oise choshech. The next Medrash then, Shmois Rabu, where does this darkness come from? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Mechoshech shalmalo, it came from the supernal darkness. Shenema yoshes choshech, choshech sisra. God makes the darkness his hiding place. Rabbi Nechemi says, Mechoshech shalmato. It was the darkness, Mechoshech shal gehenem, it was the darkness of hell. So, the Noiz Deshin says, let's have a look at this Medrash. On the one hand, you have God asking the angels, shall we, you know, I want to punish the Egyptians with darkness. Can you all agree? And they all agree. So what does that mean? And then you say that none of them argued and they all did as they were told. And yet you find that they added darkness of their own. Well, isn't that disobedience? I mean, the king who says hit him with 50 and the guy hits him with 100. So isn't adding to the word of the king a kind of rebellion? And he says, what does it mean that Rabbi Yehuda says that the darkness was a darkness, a supernal darkness? Is there a darkness? It's up there, unohoyre meshrei, you know, there's only light. What darkness is there above? And why bother, if you've got the darkness of hell, why bother sending the darkness of heaven? So the first time I've ever seen somebody, one of the Mefarshim, talk about what darkness is in this plague of Egypt. What does it really mean when we say that the Egyptians were struggling, when we take it so literally? Oh, they were in the dark. Vayomesh choshech, then, and the darkness was, you could touch it. Gemara says Kuve Dinar, it was as thick as a coin. It was like they couldn't move, and you know, it's great, but what does it mean? So, and it never really occurred to me, well, I guess I never saw the Noiz Desha before. I mean, it's such an obvious question. Well, if you turn the lights out, you turn the lights out. That's darkness. It's very scary if you're scared of the dark, you know. It's not that crippling. What kind of darkness is the real darkness that we're talking about here? And he says, Ki choyshech nikro b'mokem she'ein odem yochel limtze eitze lahatzar shalai. Darkness means you can't find any way of dealing with the pain that you're in. Whatever's going on inside you is crippling you. If I'm in so much turmoil that I can't think of any way of getting out of my own turmoil, that's darkness. If something is happening to me physically or mentally or spiritually that I can't stand it a moment longer, but I don't know what to do, that's darkness. It's a very interesting definition. And he brings a pasuk in Yecheskel, says Ubsachpanches Choshechayoim, in this place called Tachpanches, when Nebuchadnezzar came to destroy this place, it was actually in Egypt, and the prophet says, you know, it's dark in Tachpanches today because they had no way of escaping from Sancheriv, from Nebuchadnezzar. So when a person is in panic, that's to be in darkness. So what does it mean when God says to the angels? So again, another chiddush of the Noiz Desha. He said, if somebody is really evil, and somebody speaks up for him, then what are you doing when you speak up for somebody? You cast light on them. You know, we say, oh, I'm painting him very dark, right? Somebody comes and he's Melitz Yosha, somebody comes to defend that person, then it's called casting them in a good light, right? So if there's a Melitz Echad Meni Elef, if there's one advocate on the part of Egypt, then this darkness isn't going to be complete, says God. So do you all agree, he says to the angels, that there needs to be darkness right now? And they all agree, which means that all of them take a vow of silence. Even if one of them had something nice to say, some defense, some rationale, some melitz yosha, some advocacy on the part of the Egyptians that they all agreed not to. Rabbeinu Shlomo, in a sense, asks them, please, not now. I don't want anybody coming saying, but, you know, the Egyptians gave the Israelite family a place to be when they... I don't want to hear anything now because I need there to be choshech. I need to be able to put the Egyptians into this place where they will find themselves overwhelmed with panic. And so the choshech of the Egyptians, the darkness in which the Egyptians find themselves, is really a panic. They have a panic attack that goes on for 3 days. Nobody could leave where they were. And had there been one angel in heaven who spoke up for them, there would have been light. And you know, it doesn't matter how much light you have, as soon as there's light, you know, one tiny little bit of light disperses infinite amount of darkness, right? So the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, I need the Egyptians right now to be in panic. And really, the whole point about panic is that a person cannot do anything rational. Panic is it overrides the rational part of the brain. And that's the punishment. Rabbi Shem says, this is, I want to show, you know, because everything that God punishes the Egyptians, really not about the Egyptians at all, it's about us. It's negoy urufoy. The whole Egyptian experience here has to be a smiting, but really it's about healing. And, you know, like the Pia Setzner says, and Matasape, I want you to tell your children and your children's children about the mockery that I made of Egypt, and hisalalti, like how I laughed at them. And the Pia Setzner says, God laughs? What do you mean? He's punishing them. Why would he be laughing? It's just so inappropriate. Like, what's going on? Why is there this laughter? And in fact, this is the only Torah that the Ishbitzer ends, the Pia Setzner Rebbe ends it by saying, I've forgotten what I said, you know, because he would say this Torah on Shabbos, and then he would write it after Shabbos when he had time, and, you know, I guess this was a Torah of laughter, and he couldn't even remember what he'd said by the time it came after Shabbos, and he was back in the weekday. And he said, you know, so many times Rabban Shalom teaches us things, and the lessons are so painful. I guess we're difficult people when it comes to learning lessons, and we don't learn so fast. And so many times Rabban Shalom doesn't just teach us, right? He's teaching a lesson to the whole world, because it's something the world, the universe, has to learn. And we are, we're the tool. And again, you know, the lesson is so painful, and it's so ragged, and such an excoriating experience to have to live through as the universe learns this particular lesson. So here, for once in history, God has the opportunity to teach the world a lesson, and it's not using us. You know, it's the mockery that I made of Egypt, and for once Ribbono Shel Olam can laugh, because it's not the Yiddish Kinder who never have to be the ones, the tool whereby the universe learns. Everything is happening here. It's a lesson. And there's a lesson in panic, especially if you watch somebody else in panic. And he said, you know, the door is open. You know, like somebody, it finds himself locked in a dark place, and you know, they go into this panic. Call it claustrophobia. What's the definition of claustrophobia? You put him in a dark place, and he goes ape. Why is it called claustrophobia? Because claustrophobia means you put somebody in a dark place, he goes ape. So the fact that you name it claustrophobia doesn't really make any difference, doesn't tell you what it is or why it happens. But you look down with your infrared glasses, you can see the door, you can see the doorknob. It's like, hey guy, why don't you just feel around till you come to the door, open the doorknob, let yourself out? Why are you smacking yourself against the wall, screaming and shouting and tearing your hair out because you're in the dark? Why are you because the guy's in panic. And those parts of the brain which deal with the rational thinking, like, how do I get out of this? They're not working. Something else is happening. The brain is flooded in Chaisos with all these kind of panic hormones. What do I know? I need to watch this. Rabban Shem says, Yidden, you need to watch this. You have to watch this, because there's a lesson here. There's a really deep understanding of, you know, so many of the things that you do are really slowed down panic. You know, when somebody's in panic and you put him in a locked room, I can hear him, you know, from 3 blocks away screaming and banging on the walls, right? But, you know, the way we act in our lives is not that much different, right? Thank you. So Rabbi Nishlam says, Chevra, you're going to be quiet. They all agree to be quiet. So then the Medrash says, V'loy moru es devoroi, and they didn't rebel. Moshe Lemelech, an example of a king who told the guy, you know, give him 50 and he gives him 100. So really what happens here is that the angels decide to help God in that they're going to do something to the Egyptian mind which will keep it in the panic for 3 days. So they're not really adding to the punishment, they're putting like a guard, a block, a firewall on the thinking of the Egyptians that they're just not going to be able to access the rational part of their brain. So this is where the machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah is. Rabbi Yehuda says that the choshech that the angels add, the darkness the angels give as a gift to God, is the darkness of heaven. And Rabbi Nechemiah says, no, it's the darkness of hell. So what is the darkness of heaven and what is the darkness of hell? Again, the Noiz Desha. You know, I'm beginning to realize when this book first was printed in 1909, it made a really big impression. Rav Leiner, the Radziner Rebbe, said that his father told him that he still remembered, or his grandfather had told him, that when this book came out in Poland in 1909, when it was published, it made a tremendous impression on the Hasidic world, and within a very short time it was out of print and you couldn't get a copy for love or money, right? And you know, as we've been learning this Neues Deutsche now for a while, I'm beginning to see, you know, because he opens up for us concepts that we deal with all the time in ourselves. And you know, he hands it to us on a plate. It's like, this is pure genius. And he was the son of the Aramot Yosef Ishbitz, the Ishbitz Rebbe. So this is stuff that maybe comes from himself, but it's coming from his father's Torah. So he says, what is the divine darkness? What is the supernal darkness? HaChoshech shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hoye sheyedame benafsham sheim yishlechu yitamu chayeim shelahem. The Egyptians came to believe that if they let the Jews go, their life is over. You know, and during the American Civil War, there were people who felt like this, right? If we let the slaves go, our life is over. Well, in some ways, it was true. I mean, life as they knew it was going to end. But the fact that you could say to yourself, you know, my life is not going to be worth living. I can't imagine life without my slaves. It's impossible. The person I am, I depend on my slaves. My life, my world. The antebellum South, this fictitious, yeah? This was built on slaves. Slavery is the background noise. It's the basis of the society and so on. I mean, it's all these things which were not true, but they felt true. And in fact, you know, I wonder whether the Neues Deutsche was, whether people in Poland were listening to the voices that were coming from America during the Civil War at that time in the 1860s, and that it was a debate, you know, whether it was discussed. It must have been. You know, here there's a country fighting itself to the death over emancipation. What about these economies, the whole economy of the South? It depends on slavery, and you know, there's a history of Jews in the Civil War. Like, there was a shul in New York where the chief rabbi was a very big kehillah. You know, he was telling everybody why slavery is midoraisa and how we have to support the South in the war against the North. And then there was the kehillah of Charleston, South Carolina, who en masse, they all left their houses in there, you know, to protest the war against the North and to protest slavery and so on. So it's like in the South, there were Rabbonim who were outspoken, you know, emancipationists. And in the North, in New York and places like that, there were Rabbonim, just as Groyser, Talmidei Chachamim, who were, you know, darshaning on why, you know, we have to maintain slavery. So I assume that in Poland also people would talk. So here you have the Ishbitz Teure of the Civil War, right? The darkness of the supernal darkness that the Egyptians had, that the angels put on them, because the divine darkness that God says is like, I want them in panic, right? But now, what's the cause of the panic, right? This is what the angels are adding, which is like their 50%, right? So Rabbi Yehuda says that they put into the Egyptian mind a panic that, oi, the Jews are going to go, our life is going to be over, we're not going to have slaves. So even when the 10th plague comes and Makkas Bechoris happens, there's still the residue of this. They still don't feel like they can let go because their own lives are not going to be worth living. And Reb Nechemia, so Reb Yehuda says, one of the things that happened to the Egyptian mind is that it never occurred to them that they could pray. This feeling, I mean, if they believed that Pharaoh was a god, how come they didn't pray to Pharaoh? How come they never prayed at all? Because that was also part of the gift that the angels give them, is that they say to themselves, you know, and we all say to ourselves sometimes, it's not going to help. It's not worth it. Intercessionary prayer, what a primitive idea. Oi, I've gotten that. I don't have any aids. There's nothing I could do. When I stopped believing in prayer, it's very bitter. And the truth is, everybody stops believing in prayer. We all pray and it doesn't happen, right? Which one of us prays and it always comes true? None of us, right? So why does Rabbanu Shalom not just answer prayers? Because if we did, then if every time I asked for something, it would happen, the Noyes Desha says, then I would stop thinking about what I'm doing. It would be like turning the light on, you know? When I flick the switch, do I think of what I'm doing? No, I just say, oh, I flick the switch, the light goes on. Do I say, I'm making a connection so that the electrons can flow there from, you know, that electricity generating station over there and it's coming? No, I don't. I make a flick a switch and the light comes on. So I don't really think about what I'm doing. So if every time I asked for something, I said, please God, can I do this? And then it happened, I would stop really thinking about what I'm doing. I wouldn't even really know what it is that I believe, other than that if you flick the switch, that this happens. You know? And when I daven and it doesn't come true, and I daven again, after a time I ask myself, what am I doing? What am I doing? Why am I davening? This way, I start to examine my own beliefs. You know, everybody has their favorite way of arguing with God, right? And ultimately, that's what happens when I start to daven, and I daven and I daven, I come down into this place where I'm relating to God. And that uncovers for me, at least, what it is that I truly believe. And then I'm ready to daven, when I'm really in touch with what I truly believe. So the Egyptians, in their darkness, if you were to say to them, daven, you'd say, no, it doesn't work. That's not, you know, that's not... If you were to give them even a moment of respite from their panic and say, hey, Heverman, stop, daven. The angels had short-circuited that little circuit. It didn't work. That's the Choshech Shel Ma'ale. And the Choshech Shel Mata, the darkness, Rabbi Yehuda is still in the divine, right? He's talking about in the davening. If you've got darkness in your davening and you don't believe in your davening, that's Choshech Shel Ma'ale, right? That's supernal darkness. If you believe in davening, but all of a sudden you stop believing, that's a heavenly darkness, right? Reb Nechemia says no, it was a darkness of hell. What's that? That's defiance. If he said, if you told the Egyptians in their panic, if you could give them enough respite to say to them, look, I can let you out of here if you agree to let the Jews go, they would say no. That's the darkness of hell. And he even brings the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hakino v'hatavu v'hakovoid moitzien es ha'odom in ha'olam. The Mishnah says that jealousy and lust and the quest for honor, these are the things that ruin a person's life. And a person sees, it says, v'ha'odom roya b'chush moitzien os minayin. You see, I see how my lust or how my jealousy or how my pursuit of honor or power, you know, I see how it's ruining my life and I can't help it. He's really put his finger on the definition of addiction, and in fact, you know, it's, without knowing it, I quote this in the Haggadah, in the Kabbalist Haggadah, right? That addiction is such a cunning, baffling enemy of life, right? That even if you know it, and somebody says to you, look, even if you look at it yourself and you say, oi, you know, this food, this peanut butter that I'm eating, mamish, it's killing me. The next time I get hungry, it's like, where's the peanut butter? Oi, but Heshi, half an hour ago, you were in the awareness of how dangerous this is for your health. I'm hungry. Heshi, stop eating. I can't. I won't. You can't make me. Right? The voice of reason is shouted down by what? By this voice of, I don't care if I die. I want my peanut butter. It's crazy. Reb Nechemia says, yeah, it's crazy. That's the choshech of Gehenna. That's the darkness. That's the hellish darkness. It's fascinating. So on the one hand, there's the divine darkness, which is, God's not going to help me, can't help me, I'm unhelpable. And then there's the other side of the darkness is like, I don't care, I don't want help. I want what I want, now. So, yeah, it's clear to us, again, that while it was happening to the Egyptians, it's really about us, each of us in ourselves. We have this kind of choshech, the first kind of choshech, and the second kind. The first, that we don't really get enough peace of mind to really think about what's happening, and we're in this slow motion panic. And then we have both the Rabbi Yehuda's and Rabbi Nechemia's kind of choshech, which is, oh, nobody's going to listen to me, God's not going to listen to me, and there's no recourse, I feel cut off. And then the other final, the ultimate weapon of the darkness of hell, which is defiance. I bless us all with light. And we should meet again here next week, Amit Sashem.
Another week when it